Iran says its purpose of participating in the upcoming Vienna negotiations is to ensure the removal of sanctions imposed on the country. A human rights organization says some 4,000 children have been killed since the start of the Saudi war on Yemen in 2015. Also ahead, Belarus clears a makeshift migrant camp at the border with Poland that had held around 2,000 people after weeks of tensions with the European Union. Thank you for joining us. We're starting right here from Tehran, which says its goal of participating in the upcoming Vienna talks with the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal is the removal of anti-Iran sanctions. The Iranian foreign minister says all parties to the talks have reached a common understanding that the US is the main culprit and responsible for the current situation. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remarks in a phone call with his Polish counterpart. A new round of sanctions removal talks is scheduled to start on November 29th in the Austrian capital. Earlier on Thursday, Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri Kani stated that the success of the talks depends on the will and readiness of other parties in removing anti-Iran sanctions.
July 14, 2015. After years of negotiations, Iran signed a deal with the US, the UK, France, Germany, China and Russia, which put caps on Tehran's nuclear program in return for sanctions removal. The agreement was dubbed the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA. At first, it seemed like there was a new era of cooperation between Iran and the West, but that optimism was soon shattered by Washington. In 2016, Donald Trump won the race to become the President of the United States. During his tenure, he adopted an increasingly hostile attitude toward Tehran. This enmity reached a peak in 2018 when Trump unilaterally pulled his country out of the Iran nuclear deal, violating an international accord and a Security Council resolution that endorsed it. He then reinstated previous sanctions on Tehran and even imposed new ones. At the same time, he threatened other parties to the deal, including its allies, with sanctions if they refused to comply with Washington's anti-Iran measures. Despite the US withdrawal, Tehran declared that it would continue respecting its commitments under the agreement. That is, if the remaining parties, referred to as the P4 plus 1 group, guaranteed Iran's benefits as was promised under the JCPOA. Iran showed ample patience for the other sides to honor their end of the bargain. In fact, the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, in its 16 reports, confirmed Tehran's full compliance with the JCPOA until 2019. It was in May that year, and a whole year after the US withdrawal, that the country started scaling back its commitments when Britain, France, and Germany failed to keep their end of the deal. Iran's remedial measures were in line with mechanisms foreseen in the text of the JCPOA, particularly Articles 36 and 37. The country, on numerous occasions, said it would reverse those measures if the other parties respected their commitments. But after more than 3 years following Washington's unilateral pullout, Iran could not see any change on the part of the Western signatories. Ironically, the new US administration under President Joe Biden persisted with its predecessor's so-called maximum pressure campaign against Iran. Between April and June this year, Tehran held talks with the P4 plus 1 group with the aim of removing the sanctions that had been illegally imposed on it. But no breakthrough was reached. Now, a new round of talks is scheduled to start on the 29th of November. Ahead of the negotiations, Iranian officials have declared that the talks must focus on the full removal of sanctions in a verifiable manner. They have also made it clear that they will not renegotiate the country's nuclear program.
As I said, these negotiations are aimed at removing the sanctions imposed by Americans through their violation of the JCPOA and Resolution 2231. We concluded nuclear negotiations in 2015, which resulted in the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA.
Moreover, Tehran has emphasized that it will only engage in talks that lead to practical results.
We support the negotiations that guarantee our national interests, but Iran will not tie its economy and the lives of its people to the negotiations, nor will it allow negotiations for the sake of negotiations. We will not let the negotiations become attritional.
The talks between Iran and the P4 Plus One group will start on November 29th in Vienna, and Tehran will certainly take the other side's promises with a grain of salt, considering the West's record of violating its own commitments.
And Tehran slams an anti-Iranian declaration issued following a meeting of European powers, the US and several Arab states in Riyadh. A foreign ministry spokesman, Saeed Khatibzadeh, dismissed the talks and the subsequent final statement as a sham, saying they have no legitimacy. Khatibzadeh criticized the participants as instigators of conflicts who cannot make baseless accusations against others. Representatives from Britain, France and Germany met with delegations from the United States, Egypt and Jordan in Saudi Arabia on Thursday. They condemned what they called Iran's destabilizing activities in the region. The talks also focused on Iran's nuclear program. A Yemeni human rights organization has released a deeply disturbing report on the situation of children amidst an ongoing Saudi-led war on the country. The organization, known as INTISAF, says around 4,000 children have been killed and a similar number of them injured since the start of the Saudi war and siege on Yemen in 2015. It's added that more than 3 million children suffer from acute malnutrition, while over 300 of them die every day due to the lack of health services and food. The rights group said the number of children with cancer is also on the rise due to the use of internationally banned weapons by Riyadh and its allies.
Yemen's Intisaf Organization for the Rights of Women and Children has held an event in the capital Sana'a to mark the International Day for Children's Rights. The local body released a report highlighting the tragic situation of Yemeni children amid the ongoing Saudi war and the blockade for the course from March 2015 to November 2021.
For 7 years, the Saudi-led coalition, with the support of the United States, has been carrying out airstrikes and killing Yemeni children. This is a flagrant violation of international law that guarantees the protection of children during conflicts and wars. The Saudi-led coalition seeks to destroy the future of the Yemeni people by targeting educational facilities and depriving the children of their basic rights. These children are the basic foundation for building a new Yemen when the war ends.
The report says 300 Yemeni children die every day due to the lack of health services. The number of children suffering from cancerous tumors has also reached 71,000 as a result of the Saudi-led coalition's use of internationally prohibited weapons in bombing residential areas.
There is injustice and grave violation of rights against the Yemeni children. On top of them, it is the right to live. Unfortunately, the Saudi-led coalition has targeted schools and disrupted the educational process. The right to access healthcare also does not exist amid the continued closure of Sana'a Airport and the lack of necessary medicines. When we talk about children's rights in Yemen, we feel pain, and only those who experienced it will feel this pain. The children of Yemen celebrate International Day for Children's Rights because it gives them hope despite their stolen rights.
Saudi Arabia and its regional allies launched a deadly war on Yemen in March 2015. The war has killed tens of thousands of civilians, many of them women and children, and displaced millions more.
Yemenis say the atrocities of Saudi Arabia and the suffering of the Yemeni children are the results of the years-long war and siege imposed on the country. They believe that the UN's removal of Riyadh from the list of parties responsible for grave violations against children last year has emboldened the kingdom to continue its crimes in Yemen.
A Palestinian prisoner has died in Israeli custody at Soroka Hospital in the Naqab. Samir Omar was imprisoned since 2008. He suffered from congenital heart problems that were exacerbated due to the Israeli medical negligence and harsh detention conditions. Mona Kandil has more in this report.
Another Palestinian prisoner has died in one of the Israeli jails as a result of medical negligence. Sam Amour, 39 years old, died in custody at the Israeli Soroka Hospital in Bir al-Sab' in Al-Naqab. Amour from Deir al-Balah City in the Gaza Strip was imprisoned since 2008, and he suffered from congenital heart problems. According to the Palestinian Prisoners Society, Amour was transferred several days ago from Nafha prison to Asqalam. He was then transferred to Soroka Hospital after his health deteriorated. The Prisoner Society held Israel responsible for Amour's death because of the deliberate medical negligence and inappropriate detention conditions.
Medical treatment is among the basic rights of each man according to all international laws. Many Palestinian prisoners have died because of medical negligence. Amour was suffering from serious deteriorated health conditions. Israeli prison authorities knew that he was in pain and had heart problems, but they never provided him with even medical examinations. It was a slow killing policy that Israel used against Amour and is now using against other prisoners as well.
227 Palestinian prisoners have died in Israeli jails and detention centers since 1967. Hundreds of other prisoners have lost their lives shortly after their release. Prisoners' advocacy groups say the main reason for the deaths of majority of those prisoners was lack of medical care.
Amour is the latest victim of Israel's deliberate medical negligence. This is one of the most prominent systematic policies that have killed many prisoners in Israeli jails. Since 1967, 227 prisoners have died behind bars. Israel continues its policies and crimes amid the international silence.
According to a statement by the Prisoners' Society, some 5,000 Palestinians are held in Israeli jails. Some 550 of the detainees suffer from very difficult health conditions due to chronic diseases and inhumane Israeli policy concerning their treatment. The death of Sami Amour sheds light on the suffering of hundreds of sick prisoners in Israeli jails. Palestinian prisoners' organizations call for an immediate international intervention to save the lives of these prisoners. They also warn that Israeli jails might turn into graves for severely ill detainees, as Israel insists on keeping them behind bars without offering appropriate medical care. Muna Qandil, Occupied Ramallah.
Welcome back. Belarus clears a makeshift migrant camp at the border with Poland that housed around 2,000 refugees. Minsk says the refugees are relocated to a reception center near the Brzezowy crossing point. Belarus says it can send 5,000 of the 7,000 migrants staying in the country back to their homelands if they choose to return. The migrants who are planning to enter the European Union through Poland have been camping along the border in Belarus for weeks in freezing temperatures. Western countries accuse Minsk and Moscow of orchestrating the crisis, but the two reject the accusation, blaming the West for the issue. At least 11 refugees have died since the crisis began in August.
Thousands of people leaving their home countries in pursuit of a better life are now trapped in appalling conditions and fighting for survival at Belarus's western border with Poland. Their dream was to enter the EU, but now they are stuck behind barbed wires, battling freezing weather and hunger. Almost a dozen of them have already died, and fears are growing for the safety of others.
It's like so many of them doesn't have food, water, they have small kids, and they're freezing, and the weather is pretty cold. That's all I have to say.
It's no good, no water, no food, no time, no life.
Mostly from Iraq, Syria, and Yemen, migrants have been stranded in a wooded area for weeks. Fed up with the dire living conditions, a group of them tried to cross into Poland on Tuesday. But Polish forces guarding the fortified border crossing used tear gas and water cannon to push them back.
You don't follow the orders.
That triggered some to throw stones at the border guards. The incident drawing this reaction from Moscow.
The behavior of the Polish side is completely unacceptable. I think the water cannons and tear gas and shots over the migrants' heads toward Belarus state, all of it reflects a desire to hide their own actions. And they cannot but understand that they violate all thinkable norms of the international humanitarian law and other international law norms.
The EU is accusing Belarus of engineering an unprecedented wave of migrants at Poland's border in revenge for the sanctions it's suffering from the bloc. Belarus, however, denies the allegations, accusing the EU of turning its back on the migrants and trying to shift the blame on Minsk to justify its new sanctions. Russia is backing Belarus in this dispute, with the Kremlin questioning the EU's double standards over the migrant crisis, warning that such approaches put the bloc in a bad position. The EU is now looking to widen the sanctions on Belarus. Reacting to the news of the new sanctions, President Alexander Lukashenko said Belarus does not want confrontation with bloc over the migrant crisis. Lukashenko even initiated a phone call with German Chancellor Angela Merkel on Monday to discuss his proposal to end the crisis. Considering Belarus's earlier threat to shut down Russian gas supplies to Europe via pipelines that run through its territory, its latest reaction to the EU's fresh sanctions could be interpreted as a desire for de-escalation.
Turning to some coronavirus news now, the COVID-19 pandemic rages on in Europe, where several countries report a rise in infections and related deaths. The UK has reported about 200 new deaths and nearly 47,000 infections over the past day. In Germany, authorities logged more than 65,000 cases, and that's the country's highest single-day tally so far. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has already warned that the country is in a dramatic grip of a new wave of the pandemic. The leaders of Germany's 16 states have agreed to introduce new tough curbs on the unvaccinated, shutting them out from restaurants and sporting events. Those who have not received their jabs now have to provide negative test results in order to use public transport or go to the office. Brings it into our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Since 2019, more than 320 toxic substances have been detected in U.S. drinking water systems, according to a new analysis by the Environmental Working Group, EWG, a nonprofit environmental advocacy organization. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Honija Zhang, journalist. This article is published under the heading, "Hundreds of Toxic Chemicals Are Coursing Through U.S. Tap Water," new report says. Stay tuned for more. Since 2019, more than 320 toxic substances have been detected in U.S. drinking water systems, according to a new analysis by the Environmental Working Group, EWG, a nonprofit environmental advocacy organization. Those harmful chemicals are linked to cancer, adverse birth and reproduction outcomes, impaired brain development, and a revolving door of other deleterious health impacts. The findings, part of the 2021 update of EWG's National Tap Water Database, underpin the call for more rigorous federal drinking water standards and the urgency to improve water infrastructure. EWG researchers collected and reviewed results from water contaminant tests conducted by water utilities and regulators from all 50 states and the District of Columbia. After coming through the data after almost
50,000 water systems serving tens of millions of American households. The researchers found sweeping drinking water contamination from numerous pollutants such as arsenic, lead, pear, and polyfluoroalkyl substances, that is PFAS, radioactive materials, and pesticides. The database offers a panoramic view of what drinking water quality looks like when the federal office meant to protect U.S. water is in an advanced stage of regulatory capture, said EWG President Ken Cook in a statement referring to the influence of polluting industries and water utilities on drinking water safety standards. Compared to the previous study's 2019 update to the database, which identified 268 chemicals in America's water utilities, the new database added 56 new chemicals. These substances are new PFAS or emerging pollutants such as pesticides and radioactive material that are currently monitored by the Federal Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, under the agency's Unregulated Contaminant Monitoring Rule. However, these substances have yet to receive any legal limits, thwarting the water system's impetus to tackle the contamination, adding to EWG. Currently, the EPA regulates more than 90 contaminants in drinking water, a fraction of the agency's inventory of more than 85,000 chemicals that fall under the Toxic Substances Control Act. The EPA's Office of Water has not added any new substances to its regulated list since 2006. Even for substances that are regulated by the EPA, their legal limits were set based on outdated science. Alama Ike, an environmental health scientist at WG who helped construct the tap water database, told EHN, while the EPA determines contaminants regulatory standards based on their individual harms, it fails to consider the additive effect of a chemical mixture. He said, we are not being exposed to just one contaminant when we are drinking water. We are being exposed to multiple contaminants. The EPA's water regulations assure that public water systems are monitoring and taking actions to achieve meaningful reductions to human health risks from contaminants in accordance with the Safe Drinking Water Act, an EPA spokesperson told EHN. The agency also has evaluated a number of unregulated drinking water contaminants under the Safe Drinking Water Act and is taking actions to update its regulations, said the spokesperson. Consumers can enter their zip code into the tap water database and see a report of toxic contaminants in the area's drinking water as well as safety assessments put together by EWG scientists. In many areas, various dangerous contaminants have been uncovered in water samples, although they were still in compliance with federal health-based drinking water standards. Even if your water is below the legal limit, that doesn't necessarily mean it is safe from contaminants. Carsten Press, an environmental professor who studies drinking water contamination at Johns Hopkins University but was not involved in EWG's database, told EHN that it's great to provide individuals with more transparency about what might be in their water, because the data collected in this database are obtained from water utilities. Press cautioned that contaminants listed may not present the water quality in individual households. For instance, While the report may show the absence of lead in some utilities, certain individual households may still have lead coming out of the tap due to pollution from the water pipes. Pras said that the current federal regulations aren't really directed towards protecting the consumers of drinking water, and that there has been a gap between the regulations and scientific progress. Pras said there is definitely a lot of room for improvement.
Food for thought. Hello everyone, and today as Food for Thought we present you a mind-stimulating passage from the Ziyara, or standard form of salutation, for Hazrat Fatima Ma'sume, peace be upon her, the sister of the Holy Prophet's eighth infallible heir, Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Reza, peace be upon him. Peace upon you, and may God ensure cognition between us and you in paradise. Raise us on the day of resurrection in your company. Bring us to your prophet's fountain of Kothar, and quench our thirst through the goblet of your ancestor, by the hand of Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the fifth divinely appointed Imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the son of the fourth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam. Now all historians and traditionalists of Islam are unanimous that among the descendants of Imam Hassan and Imam Husayn, a maximum of religious sciences were expounded by Imam Muhammad al-Baqir. That is why the title of al-Baqir was given to the Imam, which denotes one who splits knowledge. Imam al-Baqir contributed greatly to the science of Quranic exegesis, scholastic theory, religious law, and Islamic jurisprudence, among many other subjects.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. My name is Muhammad, and I'm invited by Brother Mahdi to this segment of the program. Today, I'd like to read to you a passage about Islamic lifestyle according to Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. This passage is extracted from a book titled The Life of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Baqir, written by the great Iraqi Muslim historian and scholar Allama Baqir Sharif al-Qurashi. This great Muslim scholar and historian was born in 1344 AH in the city of Najaf. He's well known for his books on the biography and conduct of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. Please stay with me. Imam al-Baqir, peace be upon him, dispraised the hypocrite person who was double-faced and double-tongued. He, peace be upon him, said, "Bad is the servant who is double-faced and double-tongued. He flatters his brother when he is present. He backbites him when he is absent. He envies his brother when he is given something. He betrays him when he is afflicted by tribulation." These qualities denote that such a person has an evil soul, has no morals, and that he has no faith in his Lord.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's great to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about these beautiful dialogues, these great golden conversations that Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam had throughout his life. Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, this divinely appointed imam, would be able to answer questions in such a simple manner, yet despite these answers being simple on the superficial level, we find that these answers were very profound, very complex, very beautiful, yet easy to understand. And so we find in one of these conversations that Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam was asked, "Is there a thing better than gold?" Now, of course, even in today's age, we will find that gold, or let's say wealth or diamonds, these things are considered the absolute most precious things that you can own. Now, because this is 1,400 years ago, the most precious thing that an individual could own was gold. And so in today's time, you could also say that the most precious thing is gold. I mean, really, how many people have gold or diamonds or, let's say, billions of dollars? So here Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam is asked, what is more valuable than $1 billion? What is more valuable than gold? Imam al-Baqir answered, and I would really like everyone to pay attention to this. When asked, is there anything better than gold? Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam answers, yes, there is something better than gold. And that is the one who gives it. Allahu Akbar. An answer which I think nobody expected. The thing that is better than gold is the one who gives it away. In such a beautiful manner, Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam has explained so many things to us in this very simple statement, in this very simple and short conversation with one of his companions. What is really the worth of this materialistic world? Two, what is the great importance of giving charity? And three, why should we fall in love with this materialistic wealth when it is better to just give it away on the path of Allah and for the sake of Allah? Three very simple things, and I guarantee you that if you sit and you reflect over this statement, what is better than gold? The one who gives it, you will find more doors of knowledge and wisdom will open. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Hamza Saudagar.
To try to relate our condition to the conditions of Imam al-Baqir, see some parallels, although it's not exactly the same. We do have some differences here. But I'm going to focus on the similarities. And then look at Imam al-Baqir, salamullahi alayhi, what he presented. There's a methodology that he presented. The Imams stressed on this for that time onwards. So all the way until the end of the minor occultation, when Khulaini puts his book together, he is relying on a volume of resources, books of various scholars. Does he just take that book and narrate whatever's in it? Absolutely not. But this is the book of Hariz ibn Abdullah al-Sajistani, the student of Zurara ibn A'yan. Doesn't matter. That's what the book says, but there's this copy, there's the other copy, this one comes from this person, that comes from that person. The reason why the hadith book of Al-Kafi took 20 years to compile is not because the resources weren't there. It's because Khulaini is very careful. Where did this come from? Where did that come from? Now, if Khulaini did that, does that mean whatever he says? No, that doesn't mean if his judgment is that it's the saying of the Imam. Although this filters out a lot of stuff, it still doesn't mean it's necessary. There's still the process of ijtihad in looking at this. This is the teaching of Imam al-Baqir. Now, the process of ijtihad, identifying transmitters of hadith and so on and so forth, this is a difficult task. It's not something that we can just sit down and after maybe a couple days of discussion, a couple of hours each day, now like, okay, you can have the, for those who even know the Arabic language. That's not what we're suggesting. I'm giving you that background of hadith and also the knowledge that not all of our hadith are actually said by the Imams. If we have it even in our books, it doesn't necessarily mean that.
Thank you very much, dear friends, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Study shows that moderate consumption of tea and coffee may be better for your health than previously thought. The study conducted by a Chinese medical university says tea and coffee can help keep stroke and dementia at bay. And if you're wondering what is meant by moderate consumption, it's defined as something between 2 and 5 cups of tea and coffee, either alone or combined in one day. The study followed more than 360,000 people aged 50 to 74 for over a decade. Some scientists have praised the study as robust. Others, however, say the participants were all selected from the UK Biobank, which means they're healthier than the general population. Pomegranate has a special place in Iranian culture. There is a trace of the fruit everywhere from poetry to cooking. Iranians even hold a pomegranate festival in the fall. This year the event is held in one of the main parks in the capital, Tehran. The festival features different varieties of pomegranates that are grown across Iran. The visitors can also find pomegranate products, including juices, concentrates, and dressings. The event includes cultural parades, music concerts, and traditional live performances. Iranians say they always welcome the pomegranate season, as it's one of the old symbols in the country's literature and art. The Christmas season always brings happiness and joy to people around the world. Many Parisians these days are taking a respite from their daily routines and hitting famous departmental stores now light up with present boxes. Cheerful families could be spotted at Christmas-decorated galleries, Lafayette and Printemps department stores. Automated figures and colorful window displays are the center of attractions for them and their children. It's a season when people buy Christmas gifts for their loved ones, and stores make big profits this time around. Many Parisians say they want to take advantage of this period, as the government is debating whether or not to impose a COVID-related lockdown. In Venezuela, a large number of musicians are striving for one common goal, and that's setting the Guinness record as the world's largest orchestra. Over 12,000 musicians, mostly children and adolescents, have played together to make that happen. Hundreds of violins, violas, and double basses playing in unison at this setting in Caracas. The musicians are all connected to the country's network of youth orchestras. For them to set a record, over 8,000 instruments had to play at the same time during a 5-minute period of a classical piece. Right now, a Russian orchestra that played the country's national anthem is holding the record. Once done, the crowd of musicians erupted in cheers, lifting their instruments and waving Venezuelan flags. Guinness will announce its decision in the next 10 days. Tourists and residents in Los Angeles have been mesmerized by a dazzling new event the U.S. city is hosting, with holiday-themed and a full of colorful lights. Visitors can enjoy a mile-long walkway covered on all sides with brightly lit installations. Artists from around the world have taken part in the exhibition. The centerpiece display is a cathedral tunnel lit with thousands of bulbs. Another amazing attraction is the orbs, lit up with thousands of torches. The event has been a huge hit with the LA public.
Oh my gosh, it's so nice.
And it gets to be out in the open, and it's like a perfect night to do it, so it's great.
It's definitely the best. Like, we had to do, like, in a car to go see lights, and then we got to, like, now, like, go around and actually walk and get to see everything up close, which is super nice.
Yeah.
Definitely after the, what, year and a half that we've had.
Yeah.
So.
And it's really nice to see everything up close, because it's like, you see in a photo, but then it's more real and real, so.
Yeah.
The event opened to the public on the 12th of November and will run for 5 nights. Preparations for the event, however, started a month ago. The organizers say millions of bulbs and 17 miles of cables are used for the 18 art installations.
Paleontologists in Brazil have discovered remains that could belong to a species of dinosaur as yet unknown. The fossils were found at a site in northeastern Brazil. A team of scientists is trying to put together the bones and complete the huge dinosaur's skeleton. They think it lived during the Cretaceous period, which began around 145 million years ago and ended with extinction of all dinosaurs roughly 66 million years ago. from a gray and gloomy look to a cheery and colorful appearance. That's the story of how a neighborhood in Peru's capital, Lima, is being transformed to become a tourist attraction. A group of artists in Lima are bringing color and joy to this hilly neighborhood by painting the walls of houses. Creating an optical illusion of a giant mural, the project is visible from different spots across the city. The designers are hoping what they did can improve the lives of residents in a neighborhood that was considered to be unsafe before.
What we are doing here is communal work with all the neighbors, and we are doing it because it's important to change the environment through the use of colors. This hill was considered an unsafe and dangerous area of the city, so we decided to change that social stigma through art, which, for me as a muralist, is the best tool to achieve it.
The project was started 5 months ago, and workers are now putting the final touches to their work of art. The mural covers over 300,000 square meters. It's the largest in South America.
The birth of a baby sloth at an uncharacteristically hasty speed has surprised London zookeepers. A tiny two-toed sloth named Terry was born to a mother, Marilyn, at the weekend. The zookeepers say there was no sign at all that Marilyn was going into labor when they checked her in the morning. However, less than an hour, they spotted something like a tiny arm tucked into her tummy. Marilyn had quietly delivered the baby with no fuss at all while her keepers were chopping up sweet potatoes for her breakfast. The mother and baby are said to be doing well, but the zookeepers still don't know the sex of the baby.
Modern technology has changed our lives in countless ways, with robots now preparing to lend a hand in operation rooms. Surgical robots are on display at the 4th China International Import Expo. One of the machines, dubbed Mesa X, gives assistance in spinal surgery. Employing the robot can lessen bleeding by 50% compared to open surgeries. Another one assists doctors to perform interventional surgeries.
Guide valves in the vessels can be controlled even less than 1 millimeter. Yeah. This is not cannot be achieved by the human hands. With the great, I think, market impact from this showcase, we successfully performed a first case PCI in Hainan Boao on March 13th.
The producers say surgical robots will soon operate in more hospitals around China. Therefore, training centers have been established to help surgeons learn how to operate the new generation of surgical robots.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A tigress belonging to the endangered Bengal species has given birth to four cubs at the Mexican Zoo, bringing joy and hope to wildlife enthusiasts. The four were born in the San Jorge Park in the city of Ciudad Juarez on October 10th. Nearly a month on, they are in good health. That is good news, because usually when multiple cubs are born, not all of them survive. Zoo officials have not yet determined the sex of the newborn cubs. That is because their mother lets out a roar when the vets are nearby. Bengal tigers are endangered for two reasons: poaching and the destruction of their natural habitat. Here's what you can call killing two birds with one stone. Classic car lovers have gone on an exciting rally to see an erupting volcano. The event, organized by Beshbuk Rallies, happened on a Saturday. Motorists taking part in the vintage rally had the unique opportunity to witness a volcano erupting ash and smoke. Most of the participants tried to get as close as they could to the volcano, but there were also those who chose to take other vehicles because they were afraid that their precious antique cars would be damaged.
Workers digging gas pipes in the Peruvian capital Lima have discovered a cemetery dating back 2 millennia. Archaeologists have recovered 6 bodies, including those of children. All of them were buried in a seated position. The site also yielded about 40 burial vessels. The findings are thought to belong to the culture known as White on Red, which settled on the central coast of Peru centuries ago during the pre-Hispanic era.
Often, it does not take much to bring about positive social change. In Johannesburg, a group of painters are creating artworks on the trolleys of street recyclers. Reason? To encourage bystanders to look up and notice the work recyclers, locally known as reclaimers, do in the community.
I like my work to have meaning, so when I get to paint and become a part of a project like this, it's great for me, you know, because it's not every day we get to, like, do stuff like this, so, yeah.
Up until now, they were just filthy-looking jumbo bags with recyclable waste wheeling along the streets. But thanks to graffiti artists who are giving them a makeover with bold and bright designs to help identify and protect the recyclers, artists say their goal is to build a relationship between neighborhood residents and waste pickers. The reclaimers roam around the city day and night, with some motorists even considering them a risk, as the trolleys are not always visible. There are some 6,000 reclaimers in Johannesburg who make a living collecting, sorting, recycling garbage. It's a messy job, but they do it anyway. A group of women are joining hands to protect one of India's key natural sites that is also on UNESCO's heritage list, the Western Ghats, a mountain chain that's facing severe deforestation. The 27 members of this all-female task force are doing all they can to protect the area's rare ferns, mosses, and thousands of other plants. They're using a variety of gardening tools and techniques to preserve species from all over the mountains. Not only that, but they also make artificial conditions and habitats for endangered species from other parts of the world, mainly those affected by climate change. One of the conservationists explained that what they are doing is actually helping the forest regenerate.
We have witnessed the birth of a forest, and that's a very powerful thing. You know, the mind is filled with the ghastly stories of forests being cut, like the Amazon or like the Western Ghats. But here we're witness to the birth of forests as well. And that is the forest itself birthing itself, you see.
The Western Ghats Mountains are home to nearly 5,000 species of flowering plants, but many of them are globally threatened. Only less than half of the area's flora is currently under conservation. Scientists say the outlook for the mountain is very concerning. Carbon dioxide is one of the causes of global warming, but can we get rid of it to save our planet? A Swiss firm has come up with a novel idea to store CO2 underground and turn it into rocks. Company Climeworks has started operating the world's largest direct air carbon capture and storage plant called Okra in Iceland. Located in Hershey, Okra is entirely run on renewable energy. It soaks carbon dioxide directly from the air and buries it as rocks deep underground to be mineralized. Usually, a natural process takes hundreds of thousands of years to turn the gas into basaltic rocks. But here, it takes up to 2 years for the CO2 to turn into white crystals.
Once the carbon dioxide is captured, it will be dissolved in water, and here we are at the injection site. The carbon dioxide dissolved in water will come through this pipe into the well, where it will be injected into the volcanic rock at a depth of between 800 meters and 2 kilometers.
The plant is said to be removing 4,000 tons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere each year. The amount is too little to save the planet from carbon emissions, as climate modeling suggests the world needs to eliminate several billion tons per year by 2050. Here we have to take into account the saying of the head of ORCA that we have to learn to walk before we can run.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
In the limelight.
Not a day passes when the humanoid devils in Washington are not thinking of harming mankind. And not a day passes when the instruments of their terrorism are not killing people around the world, especially Muslims in Palestine, in Iraq, in Syria, and in Afghanistan. Dear listeners, what you heard was part of an article written by the staff of Keihan International. This article is published under the heading U.S. Devilry Behind Daesh Terrorism in Afghanistan. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. Not a day passes when the humanoid devils in Washington are not thinking of harming mankind. And not a day passes when the instruments of their terrorism are not killing people around the world, especially Muslims in Palestine, in Iraq, in Syria, and in Afghanistan. In the last named country from which the Americans were forced to withdraw after two full decades of destruction, they are using the macabrely murderous Takfiri terrorists called Daesh, to slaughter unsuspecting men, women, and children. These satanic elements, who have no connection to Islam, even though they pose as Muslims and carry Muslim names, are the avowed enemies of Islam and Islamic unity. The prime targets of these terrorists are mosques, hospitals, schools, markets, and other public places frequented by both Sunni and Shia Muslims. Cowards by nature, the Daesh terrorists resort to remote-controlled bomb blasts, mostly by strapping U.S.-supplied explosive belts on simpletons by telling them that these are medical girths to ease bodily pains, or handing them bags filled with incendiary materials by stuffing a few notes in their pockets. The Zionist-controlled Western media waste no time in beaming news of these wanton killings.